Writes in and says, whatever became of Ovida Kolpavi? Who the hell was Ovida Kolpavi? Sounds like a lady religious fanatic. He also says, whatever became of Henry Morgan? Wasn't that the pirate? Henry Morgan. Yes. We got to get to work here. Stop it here. Hold on. Just be calm out there, gang. Hold on. I'm looking for something. Oh, yes. Here it is. This is a very important news flash out there for you animal cuckoos. Did you know that Detroit of all cities, has been attacked in its eastern suburbs by a horde of monk parakeets? It is. I don't make the news. There it is. Putting this in my vast file of trivia. The foot-long South American cousins of the parrot. These are giant parakeets. These are not these little itsy-bitsy budgie types. Monk parakeets. Foot-long. That's a biggie. South American cousins of the parrot voraciously consume apples, pears, and peaches. And people, the experts dismally report. A population explosion is feared. With all of its woes, Detroit deserves better. Grumbling on the assembly line, the airbag controversy, housing scandals, these burdens have been bravely borne, but a parakeet plague would tax Job. We hate to interfere at such trying times, but perhaps a suburban father should make the best of adversity and the end of the apple crop by enticing the birds into Edsel's and sending them off to get forever lost in the interstate highway system. That's a Philadelphia Inquirer. Listen, if Philadelphia was being consumed by man-eating foot-long parakeets, it wouldn't be such a smart... I almost said something there, bad. I'm telling you, smart, you know what. It's a three-letter word. That's my thought for you. And now, for those of you who... speaking of parakeets, I was... just the other day, I'm sitting with this friend of mine, a couple of guys who are sitting around, and you know how things do. Your mind late at night, when the Jim Beam is on the table and it's getting dark out, and the banshees are howling in the woods, and your mind turns to thoughts of evil, perdition, trial and tribulation. For some reason we got on the subject of birds, birds. I mean birds. I'm not talking about female birds. Birds. You know, with the wings that flap, with them beaks sticking out the front. And it suddenly occurred to me, I brought up the subject, and nobody could answer it. Whatever happened to canaries? No, do you remember when they used to have canaries? No, I'm not talking about parakeets, canaries. How long has it been since you've... Now, don't laugh at this. Seriously, how long has it been since you have seen a canary? The kind that sing, you know, that... You know how canaries sing. Whatever happened to canaries? They used to sell them in a dime store and everywhere. You'd see whole cages full of canaries, these little yellow birds. Sometimes with little black flecks on them, sometimes white. Remember? But they were yellow, basically. And I have not seen a canary. They've quietly disappeared from the face of the globe, as far as I'm concerned. Do they still have them, Jerry? No, they do not. They do not. I have not seen a canary... Now, when you talk about canaries, I have some little experience with canaries. Not the personal experience, but let's say put a transcribed experience with canaries. My mother, you don't mind if I bring up a bad word here, mother. That's becoming somewhat of an obscene phrase. In this post-Freudian era, This is the age of Gloria, you know. At Gloria Patria. Oh, that's another Gloria. I'm sorry. Sorry, Jerry. Jerry, that creased your brow, didn't it? Well, I had the bad time in Latin, I must say. I did. You didn't know that I was somewhat of a Latin scholar. I mean, if you can count a D-plus as being a Latin scholar. I mean, let's put it this way. I was a worker in the wheat field. I mean, down there deep among the hick-hike hoaks. I mean, I was knee-deep in declined verbs. It was terrible. Yeah. Oh, yes. At one time, I spoke a fairly fluent Italian. Well, it actually was a fairly fluent Latin. I used to say, Puello, Puella. Hic, hic, hoc, huius, huius. And I ran out of gas at about that point. In hoc, agricola, conch, in es, spittle, lauc. Which basically translated means, please do not step on the poor little and spit not on the farmer. What's the matter with that? That's not bad. You shouldn't spit on farmers. Nothing wrong with that. I don't see anything funny in that. If you're a farmer and they're spitting on you, you wouldn't think that's funny. Hick, hike, hoke, huius. You want to know how to say that? In hoc, agricola, conch. In est, spittle, lauk. Agricola, well, agricola means a farmer. Right. Spittle means what it sounds like. Lauk. What does lauk mean? L-O-U-C. In hoc. Agricola, conch. C-O-N-C. Kunk. Well, of course, I speak South Latin. I mean, you know. But when you get involved in these classical studies, you get deeply involved in all kinds of theological discussions. I don't want to get into that. No, that's not our purpose here tonight. However, how the hell did we get on Latin anyway? What is this? You're... That was a bad dream anyway. Yeah, well, we want to talk about canaries. No, I did not. It's very not easy to make the leap from canary to Latin verbs. Not easy, but we managed it. But nevertheless, I must say that in my time, I have been a classical scholar of some note. And yes, my mother used to get notes all the time at home from my classical scholarship, I'll tell you. Yeah, you know, I made a terrible mistake. For any of you out there, I believe that it is the duty of the victims of any Holocaust to pass on their experiences to the innocent. I made a fantastic mistake when I was in high school. For those of you who are still in high school, you may benefit from the disaster that I caused to come about upon myself. I think most disasters are self-wrought. You agree? I mean, unless you get hit by lightning. And that may be self-wrought, too. You can't go around wearing a lightning rod on the top of your head long without getting blasted right out of the birds, but out of the trees. But nevertheless, I brought it on myself. I must concede this, that in my high school, it was required, if you took a college prep course, that you take 2 years of a foreign language. Did you have that same requirement? Well, I figured, it's foreign language. And when I was making out my class schedule, this was in the second semester of high school. I was going to take this foreign language. So I sat down with time for registration. They had all these little blue cards, make out your... They sent us a catalog of various things that were available in school. And the catalog, of course, had all kinds of implied value judgments. They would warn you about various courses. It says, in little kind of phraseology, like an interesting course for truly serious scholars. That meant look out. If you're hanging on by your fingernails, be careful. This level will be the one that'll do it to you. Others were a fun course. That meant that if you're a dildoc and you're going out for the football team, you better take this one. Passing out towels in a gym. Yeah, they actually had a course that was similar to that. It was called Physical Education Administration. And its application, and it said 2 hours of lab work a week, which meant that you worked down at the gym passing out basketball bladders, stuff like that. But, yeah, you got credit for it. But nevertheless, there was this girl. Now, I think more than one male has been drawn into a maelstrom, into a veritable typhoon of disaster because of women in his life. And I might say it's the other way around. No question about it. That the curious and sometimes inexplicable factors which bring together two totally disparate individuals result often in gunplay. God knows what kind of legal fees it generally results in, and the weeping and wailing and lost lives. But I, at a very early age, second semester, there was this fantastic chick who, by the way, she's almost totally disappeared from my mind. I just remember the name. Now, why I remember the name? Well, her name was Helen Kubelik. Started with a K. And she had all the basic sensuality that is often ascribed to the Slavic races. Yes, she was Lithuanian. And Helen Kubelik, with a K, Helen Kubelik would sit up there in the front of that class, and she would radiate a fantastic, almost a primal, basic sensuality. She just radiated it without doing even trying. She just sat there. And it would just come out from her in waves. And you had to have a certain type of sophistication to appreciate it. That's true. Because I remember one time mentioning Helen Kubelik to Schwartz. Schwartz, remember how the subject came up. I was back in the garage that me and Schwartz ate our lunch in, school lunch. I don't know why we went to the garage to eat our lunch. We'd gone to these are things which one that cannot explain after the fact. There's a hell of a lot in your life you can't explain, too. Do you agree? Why you did things at a certain time? Had a certain logic, inner logic, they call it, at the time, which has since been lost. But for some reason, which remains lost to history, and I'm sure that the later biographers will wonder about this, that me and Schwartz and Flick, Brunner, and Bolek Rakowski, and a couple of other guys, Claude Eaton, used to repair to the fashionable garage back of school every day to eat our lunch. Now, I believe, seriously, I really do believe that Freud was only partly right in his analysis of the human character. I think a lot of things happened to the human being which did not have much to do with sex, one thing and another, that did cast a shadow and a pall upon his future life and set the course of his future life. I'll ask you a bit of trivia. Did you ever read a book called The Outsider? Who wrote it? Well, it had a lot of valid points. Very interesting book. I will leave that hang. He was English, and he is English. He's still writing. But he wrote a book about what makes a guy into an outsider in his society. How does he get to be an outsider? That's very hard to pinpoint. It's not enough to say, well, you know, his background, his family life. No, a lot of things happen that cause you to slowly peel off from the general formation of mankind. If you can imagine mankind flying in formation, like a whole flock of P-51s, and all of a sudden a couple of guys are playing tail end Charlie, or they're way out somewhere doing the individual reconnaissance work. And nobody knows why, see? Who knows, The great mysteries of the universe. Speaking of mysteries, this is one of them, WOR New York. Sabena Belgian World Airlines has an urgent announcement for young travelers who plan to go to Europe this summer. After June 27th, the present $220 youth fare to Europe will no longer be available. The very next day, the 28th of June, youth fare will go up to $263. However, there will be no more youth fare for 24 and 25-year-olds, moreover, that means, and no eligibility for students up to age 29. So, you better get down there fast. The $220 youth fare will apply on every Sabena flight to Europe right up until the 9:45 p.m. departure, June 27th. You can return any time within a year. So, that's an important note if you're planning to make the European scene this summer. See your travel agent or call Sabena, Belgian World Airline, for details. Sabina's number is area code 212-961-6200. And let's see, we have a little spot here for Mountain Valley Water. If your bourbon hasn't been tasting good lately, maybe it's because you're mixing second-rate water with it. We'd like to recommend Mountain Valley Water from Hot Springs, Arkansas. It's been proven by 100 continuous years of use, the only water popular across the nation. Mountain Valley Water's mellow taste and satisfying effect will convince you that it's right for you. You sit down with some of that Mountain Valley Water, by God, it'll bring the roses to your cheeks. For a free folder and price list, or have Mountain Valley Water delivered to you, mail a card to M.E. Mysterious address here. Me, it says. I don't know who that is. It says M.E. In care of W.O.R. New York, 10018. Or just write the word water on it. And they'll know that you're desperate out there. Okay. New York, Bryant, 95252. That's New York. Call them. You've tried everything else. You might as well try drinking water for a while. See what that does to you. Hey, listen, little note here. We got the House of Chan, and you know a lot of you people are going to probably be coming in for summer weekends here in the city, and I'd like to give you a personal recommendation, a really personal one. You know, over the weekend here in New York, it's very hard to find a good restaurant open and one you can afford, and it's really difficult. And I would like to recommend the House of Chan, which is an excellent Chinese oriental restaurant. They have hundreds of dishes. It's one of the great menus in town. And they're at the corner of 52nd Street and 7th Avenue. That's right around the middle of town. If you're going to Rockefeller Center, any of those places, the House of Chan is right there, man. And they're open Sundays. They're open until midnight. They serve lunch. They serve dinner. They have a good bar. And they have a fantastic Chinese menu of all types. So that's the House of Chan, 52nd Street and 7th Avenue, 7 days a week. And don't forget, they're open till midnight. So make the scene. And let's see. What's this? Evelyn Wood. Take a free mini lesson and increase your reading and memory abilities on the spot. According to the spot, for years, man has dreamed of possessing a powerful memory. That can also be a fantastic curse, by the way. A memory that can store information for long periods of time. And he's also dreamed of being able to retrieve this information accurately and on command. You know, you look at your mind, you say, hey, mind, give me March 27th, 1952. What was I doing that day? Well, due to a new technique, you can learn how to develop a reliable memory for virtually any kind of information, including that which you read. And the technique is being offered this summer with the Evelyn Wood Speed Reading Course at no extra cost. You get both memory and speed reading for the price of one. This week, the Lyceum will be holding this free mini-lesson at a location near your home. You come to a free mini-lesson, increase your memory and reading speed on the spot. And let's see, they're going to have a free lesson tomorrow night at 8 in the Bronx at Fordham University, Faculty Memorial Hall, in Garden City at the Roosevelt Field Lower Concourse, in Manhattan at 72 West 45th Street, in Queens at the Flushing YMCA, that's at 136-46 Northern Boulevard, and in Morristown, New Jersey, at the Governor Morris Inn, 2 Whippany Road. Okay. Well, let's see. You want to that terrible thing about the parakeets and Helen Kubelik it's an unfortunate thing how I got involved. I'm just going to pass it along to you, any of you kids out there that might be innocent and are liable to walk into the same wearing blender. It's terrible. You know, some things you walk into in life seem so great in the beginning, right? And 2 weeks later, you can't figure out what the hell happened. When the police are outside, you can hear gunfire in the distance, and they're chopping down the doors, and there you are, you know? It all started out so groovy. Well, that's me and the story of Helen Kubelik. Helen Kubelik, a human wearing blender. Hoo-wee! And Helen used to sit up there. She was with the K's, you know, up there in the middle of the class. And had I been closer, maybe it wouldn't have worked out the way it did. But I was in the back, and distance lends enchantment. This is always a fact, that when you sit out there and watch the movies of Vanessa Redgrave, it's easy to fall in love with her. But if she's living in the same room yelling at you all the time, it's a different scene. I mean, yeah, that's I speak with experience there. Yes, indeed. But nevertheless, the factors that go to make up human disaster are far more complex than the simple propositions of Freud. After all, Freud wrote almost 100 years ago. That man had hardly emerged from the stage where he had webbed feet, and the complications had not yet arisen. I will admit that the first thing that drew me to Helen Kubelik was not necessarily sex, distance, many things. No. It was a far more exalted passion that I felt. When you're in the second year of high school, you tend to feel highly exalted passions. You write bad poetry. Yes, you do. And there I am, sitting in the back of the room there, and I see this Slavic, this high-cheekboned vessel of all that is desirable come in every day with her pals. We all know, of course you know that all males know this, that every fantastically beautiful chick comes usually with an escort, like a destroyer escort of maybe 2 to 3 dogs. It's a fact that you have to get through those others to get to the, you know, to get to the real thing, and you generally have to find dates for the others too. It's very complex, this problem. So nevertheless, Helen Kubelik used to come in and radiate this Slavic passion. And I should have known after my experience with Josephine Kosnovsky that something else, it was about to happen again. That was another story. It's beyond the scope of the current lecture, and I will not burden you with it. However, Helen Kubelik was a one-semester passion and never really got to the point of a passion. It was a concept more than a passion. And she was always in the distance there. So Helen Kubelik, on the day that we were registering for our classes for the following semester, happened to be, we were registering in the library, as a matter of fact. If you remember going through registration, okay, it was in the library. And we were seated randomly in the library. You could just sit anywhere you want with your registration cards and make them out. Well, I had my eye on Kubelik. Helen Kubelik, she of the high Slavic cheekbones and the slow eyes, that's spelled S-L-O-E, the slow berry. You've heard the term, haven't you? Her eyes were passions, pools of slow passion, S-L-O-E. You haven't heard that expression? You have. I'm surprised. I didn't know that you read, Jerry. I'm pleased and delighted. But nevertheless, she just had these dark eyes. Her eyes were pools of passion. She had these high cheekbones. And she spoke with the slightest accent. Just the slightest accent. A vague Hedy Lamarr accent, you know. She would say things like this. Well, opposite me at the library table was Helen Kubelik. And I am trying to read what she is writing down on her registration card, because I wanted to get in the same classes where Helen Kubelik was in. Have you ever tried to do this? You haven't. I cannot imagine that I was, how can I say it? I was, no, I couldn't be. No, I was not precocious. After all, it was the second semester of my first year in high school. You mean my interest in the Helen Kubeliks of this world was an interest born of precocity? No. Because there were many of my peers who were interested in various other females that would go floating around the hall. So I was not alone. Don't tell me you weren't. My God, don't tell me. Jerry, you must have been. Yes, I can see you were. So I'm sitting there trying to figure out how I can get in classes with her. See, it was not enough to be in the homeroom with her, where we had very little contact. You must remember that our homeroom was a brief, like a 12-minute period before classes. You would come in there and sit there, and Miss Snyder would read the announcements of the day. You know, like, the biology club will meet in room 202 this afternoon at 3:45, immediately following the 8th period. Those of you who wish to look at the used book selection this year, you will find mimeograph sheets of used books available at the office. Miss Matson will give you one if you ask her. Any of you
who wish to pay your locker fees, you have until...
You know, that kind of stuff, you know, the very exciting news. And we didn't say much in the homeroom. And then, just about the time Miss Snyder would finish with her last announcement, like, those of you who are, again, delinquent in your payment of the Biology Club dues... will find that you will not be allowed to take part in the Biology Club picnic, according to Miss Crystal Reeder, the head of the Biology Club. The bell would go, and it was everybody for himself from that minute on. So I did not speak much to Helen Kubelik. I worshipped from afar. However, I knew she was in a college prep course, just like I was. I also knew that she was also a freshman, just like I was. So on this fated day, when I practically wrecked my life, I am sitting in the I'm sitting in the library making out my blue registration cards for various classes to be taken the following semester. This was always done in the springtime, so that when you came back the following fall, you would be properly registered and class would go in a fairly orderly fashion. Now, some schools have their registrations in the fall. Our school registered about 3 or 4 days before the last day of the year, before summer vacation. So, you know, it was a very advanced type of school. They assumed that all of us were going to pass into the next, you know, that was a terrible assumption. But I am sitting in the library on a nice, beautiful June day. And opposite me is sitting Helen Kubelik, and she has a very subtle perfume on. I can smell it. Usually in the library, which was located just over the gym, the perfume was very different. It was the boys' gym, and you could smell fermenting gym shoes and various other articles of gymnasium apparel. But on this day, the heady scent of musk, and the Venetian blinds were open, and it was a June day outside. I could hear the sound of tennis balls being battered back and forth by the tennis team. It was one of those fantastic moments. And I looked across into her mysterious, passionate eyes. And I said to her, excuse me, is your name Helen? I said, pretend I didn't know her. She says, yes. I said, what foreign language are you taking? And she says, Latin. I said, what? She says, Latin. Well, I said to her, that's a coincidence. I was about to sign up for Latin. By George, I'm taking Latin. what the course, who are you signing up for with three Latin teachers? Little I realize that the three Latin teachers were like the three witches of Endor. I did not know the Latin teachers. I only knew later that they were often called the Three Witches of Endor by the more classically inclined failures in our class. They were. I signed up for the middle one. You curious what her name was? Mrs. L.D. Enderby. Enderby, E-N-D-E-R-B-Y. Mrs. L.D. Enderby. Stands for Lillian. And the D, which we never did find out what it actually stood for, but it all to the members of the class, it was damnation. They used to call her Old Damnation Enderby. And so, nevertheless, also she was known as Declension Enderby. So, hello, baby. So the story is a sickening one, and it's all right. The show is in here, friends. But I said, who are you signing up for? She says, gee, I don't know the name of the teacher. It's the second period, room 202. Well, so I hastily looked back through my catalog. Second period, room 202. Mrs. L.D. Enderby. Latin 1. And underneath it says, Latin 1 is available to students in the college preparatory courses. Mm-hmm. That's me. So I write down room 202, Mrs. L.D. Enderby, Latin 1. I signed my name. I figured I got it made. Me and Helen Kubelik sailing through the seas of classical literature together, translating Julius Caesar together translating. You know, I could just hear the sound of classical lutes playing. Well, I signed up for that, and I'm still peering over at the, you know, the top of her book there to see what else she's signing up for. She signed up for a study hall, by the way, which met in the cafeteria. Yes, a study hall, the fourth period. She signed up for the third period lunch, which is normal, since I was also going to have lunch the third period. So everything went off pretty good. And that summer, I was making plans. All summer, I was going to, you know, I was looking for, you know how it is in the summertime when you're off for summer. You don't see a lot of the kids you see during the school year, right? Well, all summer, my passion grew for Helen Kubelik because this was a very dramatic summer for me in many ways. First of all, I grew 1.5 feet that summer. Yes, that's right. And, well, it was, you know, it's the year between my freshman year and my sophomore year. You do tend to grow heavily in that year. I grew heavily, along with a certain glandular development. And various other things began to manifest themselves. And, well, that's beyond the scope of the course at this point. We will take up biology next semester. However, towards about the end of the month of August, it began to be obvious that school was going to occur again that year. Our worst fears were realized, that school was about to happen again. And there was a certain amount of excitement beginning to grow. Of course, I at that time was deeply involved in summer football practice. We had spring and summer football practice. So I went back to school in August. Schwartz and a couple of other guys. Schwartz was 2.5 feet tall, weighed 93 pounds. So obviously Schwartz was not out for football. No way. But I was. And so that summer, I spent doing things called, that late August, I spent doing things called the rocking chair. It's a fantastic form of physical cruelty, which was devised by the PT department. You know what the rocking chair is? Of course you do. You know what the chicken squat is, don't you? That's a goodie. When you put your arms out akimbo, and you put them under your armpits like that, and you squat. And then you hop up and down to the count of 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. And when the Huffine, the PT type, would get particularly sadistic, he would also have us cluck as we did it. He says it develops your lungs. So to see 45, 295-pound football players wearing sweatsuits with their arms akimbo hopping around the football field going, quack, 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 1, 2, 3, 4. Very humiliating, and also it sure hurts your gut. You used to get unbelievable cramps in the thighs from that one. That was a goodie for the thigh muscles. And sweating like, absolutely like stuck pigs, hopping up and down. Well, that August went slowly and painfully. And as September approached, we began to have games. We began to play inter-squad scrimmages. At that point, I was on what they call the JV, the junior varsity. I was on the second team. That's a polite name for second team. But that was still, nevertheless, the varsity. And so the JV would scrimmage against the first team. And that was pretty violent, especially since we were continually playing defense. I can't... Oh, you know, and there's nothing. I don't know whether any of you, of course, any kid that's ever been out for major football varsity play. After all, this was a big school. We had 3,000 students. Oh, yes, that's a big school, and it was a tough scene to be on that football team. Many came, but damn few were chosen, I could tell you. And there I was. And I didn't realize at the time when I was chosen to be on this junior varsity, I was chosen not for my ability at that point to play football, but for my ability to take continuous and unending and totally sadistic punishment. We were constantly on defense against the varsity, which was running offensive plays against. We never got the ball. We never got to do anything back. And by the way, every little success that we would have, like say breaking through the defense and tackling a guy for say a 5-yard loss, would be treated as a capital crime.
It was always a sign of failure on the part of the offense, not on not applauded as oh, they used to bug us. So we would and I can remember hour after hour after hour, and we had this guy named Shanner who was the offensive coach, who had been an All-American. And an All-American, one of the Big Ten universities, was built like a fire plug with feet. And Shanner used to run the offensive scrimmages. Now, this was the first varsity club. And they did not use, incidentally, the varsity defense against them because they were afraid they'd get hurt. If you're really honest to the case, the varsity defense would scrimmage against itself. Only us would. So whenever they would carry one of the JVs off, you know, with his arm hanging by threads, with his foot twisted 180 degrees behind him, not a tear. So Shanner is out there running the offensive plays. And he'd say, All right, you guys, 32 left yellow. We knew what the damn play was, 32 left yellow. They never told us what the plays were. We just knew the name of it. And he'd say, 32 left yellow. Now listen, Kyle, I want you to pull out fast. Get the lid out. Pull out fast. I want you to cut down that linebacker before he can get out of his damn tracks. All right, 32 left yellow. Let's see it. And these guys would go down, up, two, three, four, 32, one, two, left, yellow, one, two, three, four, and they'd come charging at us. Well, I was playing left linebacker. There would be the sound of an approaching thunderstorm. I would move forward, and once in a while, I would stop the play, at which point Shanner would say, "What the hell happened there? What the hell happened there? Hey, Kyle, I want you to get the lead out. Move out. Move out. I want one step, a beat, and then move in between tackle and guard. Get that linebacker." Did he once say, "Shepard, that was a great play"? Never. Never. So we would line up again. He would say, 32 right blue. 32 right blue. Now, Galileo, on this play, take one beat before you pull out and then move in and get the linebacker. The linebacker. All right. 32, right blue. Let's see it. 32, right blue. Hup. 1, 2, 3, 32, right blue. 1, 7, hup. 1, 2, 3, 4. And again, they come only from another direction. Well, I don't know why I'm telling you all this, except to say that this terribly, terribly physical and often disastrous August was only the prelude to a further disaster. All right, you want to hear the further disaster? You want to hear it, all right. 3 days before the opening of school, the JV played its first JV ball game against another JV of another school, namely George Rogers Clark. Now, as you could tell, I was on the defensive club, right? We had a defensive platoon, we had an offensive platoon. Now, we hardly ever spoke because there was a certain amount of animosity of the defensive platoon for the offensive platoon, who figured that the defensive platoon was taking all the hard stuff, getting kicked around, getting their noses busted, and the offensive platoon was getting the cheers. This is largely true. It's true in pro ball. It's true all the way down the line, you know. So there was a certain amount of tension between the two of us. Well, the opening ball game started with us receiving. And by the end of the first quarter, the score stood at 0-0. And the tension was growing between the defensive platoon and the offensive platoon. Every time we would get that ball, within maybe 20, 30 seconds, there would be a fumble. We would be back out there again. So we're playing hour after hour defensive football. And finally, we eked out a measly touchdown, which was scored by the defensive club recovering a fumble in the end zone. So the halftime is a very tense halftime. Well, suffice it to say that there were two broken ribs on the defensive club. There were at least three busted noses. There were about nine sprained ankles. and assorted problems as a result of that first ball game with George Rogers Clark. 3 days later, I'm sitting there with a heavy bandage around my left wrist, in case you're curious. Heavy bandage around my left wrist. I had a piece of plaster under this left eye where I got grazed by a spike in the middle of a very interesting altercation down on the 7-yard line. And I find myself in my first Latin class. My body pain aches. And up there is Miss Lillian Enderby.
Had a high voice. She was so talk like this. And she would say, "We are going to study a great classical language, and the language is Latin. For those of you who have had an interest in history, you will find this is a very rewarding experience. That Latin itself is the basis in the formation of all Western languages, with the exception of certain languages, which will come up later in the semester."
No, Helen Kubelik. Helen Kubelik has transferred to another class. God knows. I never saw her again, incidentally, if you're curious. Helen Kubelik never again entered my ken. But Miss Enderby did. By the end of the second week, I know that this is something I cannot understand. I can't understand Latin at all. I can't understand the first. I don't know what they're talking about. And already these guys are sitting there having long conversations. There were people in my class were saying things like, "Poetic, come on in hoc agricola." What the hell is going on here? It was then that I stepped from the frying pan into the fire. You had 2 weeks if you wanted to transfer to another class. And in desperation, I went up to my advisor. I said to Miss Snyder, my bandaged wrist paining me, throbbing me, a great swatch of plaster under my left eye, which, by the way, I still bear the scar for. But a lot of you people thought that I had three eyes. No, that's a scar right there. So I went up to Miss Snyder and I said, "Miss Snyder, you're my advisor. Please give me some advice." She said, "Yes." I said, I just can't hack it there in that Latin class. What am I going to do?" And she says, "Well, I would suggest that you transfer to, why don't you transfer to Miss Linus's class?" I said, "Miss Linus's class? Yes, that's a German." I said, "Okay, great." I figured, you know, I mean, I knew German words like, I had read a lot of war stories, like they would say things like, "Ja, war." They would say things like, "Schweinhund." So I figured I knew something about German, you know, a streusel coffee cake. I signed up for German. Well, let me tell you this, friends. Latin, at least, is printed in civilized letters. Have you ever tried to read German letters? I couldn't even read the damn letters. I don't know what they were. You know, they looked like a whole bunch of illumined Greek manuscripts or something. Well, I want to say this. By the end of the second week of German, I had transferred out of college preparatory, and I was taking something called Printing and Shop 1 and 2. Oh, God. And from that minute on, the sense of incipient failure has dogged me. I can hear the hounds of hell nipping at my bare bones of my classical past. WOR New York. Next, John Wingate and Night Beat.
How does your conduct, human behavior, the sociologist would call it, how does your conduct affect Wall Street? Can you play the market by the way you and I act? Yeah, possibly. We'll learn tonight. John Wingate, Night Beat. Good morning. Thank you. sound of night, but it doesn't have to be lonely. It isn't on Wingate's Nightbeat. Excitement, challenge, controversy, everything, young and old. I'm John Wingate, the program Nightbeat. Coming up first, America's best-selling author, Runa Jaffe, on The Other Woman, a special breed of woman, whatever that means. Then, Lynn and Joel Rapp. For years, they were comedy writers for Lucy and for Gilligan's Island. Now, they operate Mother Earth's Plant Boutique. And later, Your Human Behavior and the Stock Market. John L. King on Human Behavior and Wall Street. Today, the market rallied, but day after day after day, it went down and down and down. Human behavior affects the stock market, especially on Wingate's Nightbeat. And Nightbeat is just fun. You calling in, your questions, talk to me if you want to, or if you have nothing better to do. Wingate's Nightbeat.